thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. Welcome back.
And welcome back to you.
Yes. You had a good trip to Russia?
I did. I went to Russia, and I have to say, all things being considered, I'd rather be here.
Well, good to know. Good to know. Yeah. So we have with us...
Well, wait a minute. You went to Boston.
I did go to Boston. It's domestic. It just doesn't have the same cachet.
Right.
I went to go visit family. Okay. Very different.
So I went to visit family that I had five generations ago.
Did you meet them?
No, they're all serfs. They weren't around where I was hanging out.
And all you brought back was a cane.
A cane. Right. I hurt my leg and I had a cane, which was very depressing. But I'm glad to be back.
Yes. Well, it's good to have you back. So we have on the show today Arlene Kogan, and she is a sought-after speaker, trainer, and coach on leadership and philanthropy. She also has her certified financial planner and is an expert on giving and philanthropy in general. So thanks so much, Arlene, for being here with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
So the first article today, interestingly, is a series of articles, and this looks like a series of all types of articles. I have two or three about this subject, and the next subject I have two or three. It looks like everyone's writing about the same thing. And this article is called Good Luck Fishing for Bargains in China. And it begins by saying, over the last 10 years, a $10,000 investment in China stock would have yielded $19,600, while the S&P 500 would have yielded almost $40,000. And the reality is that while China has had a very strong economy, its stock market hasn't done as well. And the article goes into some of the reasons for it. And the major reason the article opines is that the supply of shares is contracting in America, whereas in China, they keep issuing more shares. And this has to do with share buybacks. And I don't know how they did it, but the study said that they were able to explain 80% of the difference by considering the companies in America that bought back their stock and how the reduction in supply of stock plus the driving up of prices by companies buying their own stock has been accounts for the better stock market performance in America. And what's interesting about this is it doesn't really take into account the reason that companies typically buy stock back, and that is, at least academically, you buy your stock back when your return on assets or return on equity is less than the return on equity for your shareholders. That is, when you can't reinvest money at a rate greater than your investors can, you buy back the stock and give the money back. And so
it's actually, if you think of it, not necessarily it doesn't show that the company is as healthy as you would otherwise think.
It brings up a whole bunch of subjects. And, you know, the next article by Jason Swig goes on to say that in the 1800s, and again, he's going back a little further than the first article.
I think the title of the article says it best.
Yes, the buybacks and debate over their merits aren't new. And it goes back to the 18th century. And in the 18th century, and I guess it may be true today too, people didn't trust company offices. And they, believe it or not, back in the 1800s, had mandatory stock buybacks in order to make sure that the company didn't have excess cash that the managements could steal. So it made companies distribute money. You know, the fact is a buyback is a negative act. That is, it's giving money back. And at the same time, it raises the price of the stock. And one of the things that, if you want to be cynical, is that if a company manager has stock options, by buying the stock back, it possibly puts the stock options in the money because it raises the price of the stock. And so there's a whole bunch of reasons why stock buybacks do still, even after the 1800s, benefit company offices, in this case, who have stock options. The last article about buybacks is that it's slowing down, and because this tax benefits of the Tax Reform Act from a year ago caused huge buybacks to be able to take place. But now the cash available for buybacks is shrinking, and so the expectation is buybacks will be less for sure this year and probably even less next year, which takes some demand away from the stock market, and that could cause stock market weakness because we're not going to have that extra buying power.
And, you know, based upon what people are saying about the Fed, they see that and they're looking to lower interest rates.
The next set of articles is about municipal bonds. And the title of this article is Risky Municipal Bonds Keep Up a Hot Streak. Investors seeking yield are piling into the riskiest corner of the municipal bond market. $8 billion have gone into funds in high-yield municipal bonds, which is very strange given the fact that there are, in the case of certain municipalities, some real risk. Overall, there's no question that municipal bonds have been safe, but in the risky area, which is where the high yield is, there have been some defaults. And yet, because people are really searching for yield, they're pushing up municipal bond yields. And what is most surprising is that we're beginning to see investors from all over going into municipal bonds, despite the fact that there were some negative aspects to the Tax Reform Act that you would suspect would cause the demand to go down. But yet still, you're seeing incredible demand for any type of municipal debt.
Now, it's important being in California to remember that California GOs are actually not junk, so you don't have to worry about that. By our constitution in the state of California, they have to pay the California GOs back. So you're not at risk of default. But let's say a water or a toll road or something along those lines is where you've seen some default happen.
Well, I don't know if I totally agree with that. I remember 25 years ago when San Diego filed for bankruptcy. San Diego isn't California.
Well, so the individual municipalities are, but if you do a general obligation
for the state,
that is what is there are protections within the state of California's constitution.
And the last article about junk bonds is not necessarily about municipal bonds, but junk bonds are, because they have higher yields, have finally gone into the negative. That is, in Europe, junk bonds now are yielding a negative yield. So think about that for a minute. They've always had a premium on junk bonds because you take a greater risk. But now in Europe, there are bonds selling at a negative yield, which means you are paying the company for the right to lend money to them.
What's interesting is in Europe, there are actually their government debt is the same. You're paying the country to basically lend them money.
And part of the reason for this, this negative yields on municipal bonds is that high quality government bonds are in short supply. One of the whole problems in Europe today is, and there was an article today I don't have here with us, but they are typically not interested in borrowing. Europeans are much more frugal in that respect. And, you know, they are not, even with very, very low interest rates, spending. So you're getting European countries not really offering bonds, even though the yields are low or negative. And so in looking for any type of investment opportunity, people are buying up junk and pushing even junk bonds into the negative territory. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we could be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So we have on the line with us Arlene Kogan, who is a Amazon number one best-selling author, as well as a former Wall Street veteran in both the trust and investment world. Arlene, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your personal history.
I'm a certified financial planner by training, and I spent, as you said, 20 years on the trust and investment world, really helping people, you know, build and preserve their wealth and avoid taxes. And I had two beautiful daughters, and my husband and I decided to move from, you know, Wall Street, from New York all the way across country to Portland, Oregon, so we could raise our children next to my brother-in-law, sister-in-law, and their kids. And it was a fabulous decision. But when I moved, my priorities changed. With two daughters, I had experienced sexual harassment, the glass ceiling, and wage discrimination on Wall Street. And I wanted to show them that they didn't have to have that same experience, that they could have a job they loved and get paid well. And when I moved out to Oregon, I stayed home for a couple of years and saw a career coach. And when I saw the career coach, everything came up philanthropy and benevolence. And I was stunned after, you know, so many years in the finance industry, I didn't know how to equate that. But what I did do is I dug deeper into that and ended up finding a position with the Oregon Community Foundation. which is the ninth largest community foundation in the country. And when I was there, I really saw so many people, you know, leaving money at their end of their life or through their life. And then my mother, 8 years ago, got sick with pancreatic cancer. And being the financial expert in the family, she kind of handed me all of her documents and said, does this look right after you and your sister and brother? After Charity, does it go equally to you, your sister, and your brother? And it did, but we were shocked to see that only 5% of her estate was going to Charity. So we decided to encourage her to give more, and she increased her giving from 5% to 10% in her estate plan. And that was such a heartwarming and heartbreaking experience that I decided right then and there I did not want to be one of those people waiting to the end of my life to really embark on giving. And I created my own donor advised fund at the Community Foundation, and it was the best thing we ever did.
So now, what were you, your sister, and your brother all on the same page of wanting your mother to increase her charitable giving?
Yeah, Diane, that's an excellent question. So, you know, at that time, my mother became ill. We had about 6 to 7 months with her. And my sister was in her, you know, early 50s, and my brother and I were in our late 40s, and we were all successful beyond our wildest imaginations. We did not need the money. And she had just had a very simple life, and there were so many causes near and dear to her heart that we all encouraged her to give more because there's a real joy in giving.
So now, is that what inspired you to write your Amazon number one best-selling book of Make a Charitable Gift That You've Never Imagined?
Yes. You know, it's really an intersection between those 20 years in the trust and investment world where I'd see people who were stuck because there was a family situation, a sale of a business, a sick loved one, and they just weren't comfortable enough about making a charitable gift. It was either I help this situation or I make a charitable gift. They didn't see that it was possible to do both. So after spending time in the trust world and then in the nonprofit world, I just wanted to write something that broke giving down into manageable pieces so everyone could make a charitable gift they never imagined. So it's a combination of the trust work and the nonprofit work and just making information available to people so they know how to do it themselves.
Now, during your career on Wall Street, did you always feel this tug towards the philanthropic giving side of your work as a trust in the trust department? Or is it something that you thought that you think was always with you? You just didn't see that path forward in your early career?
I was the exact opposite. I was like, let's make money and let's have fun with it. And there was, you know, yeah, I did charity. It was something ingrained at the kitchen table. But when it came to other people's money, it was all about the growth of it and how to transfer it to heirs. It had nothing to do with philanthropy. Philanthropy is something that came into the picture after I saw that career coach. And I was like, I have to check this out. I want to find meaning and purpose. And if this is what's coming up, I better go check it out.
Most people in the country, in fact, there was a recent study that said that about half the people in the country could not afford a $400 automobile repair bill. So when we're talking about philanthropy, a really small percentage of the country is in a position to do this. Are you suggesting that there are ways to become a philanthropist even with a small amount of assets?
You know, I am. And here's an example I give in my book. If there's an organization you give $100 to every year, and let's say, you know, it's an arts organization, a local arts organization, if you want to endow that gift, and what I mean by endow is make a larger gift at your death, which would ultimately, if managed properly, pay out $100 every year to that organization. What you do is you take that annual gift and you multiply it by 20. So 100 times 20 is $2,000. If you left a $2,000 gift through your estate plan to that arts organization, you've made a charitable gift you've never imagined, and you're a philanthropist.
So
now let's layer on that. I don't want to go pay an attorney to do this, so if I have a small retirement plan, I just put a simple beneficiary designation to that arts organization, and I've just made that charitable gift without paying a dime to any attorney. Sorry, attorneys out there.
So are you also advising in your book and when you speak to people about the tax benefits of setting up charitable trusts?
Absolutely. That's a big portion of it. The book really talks about the comprehensive planning includes three areas: your personal goals, your financial goals, which includes your tax, your preservation, and your growth of assets, and then your legacy goals. Taxes always have a play into it.
So when you look at someone's problems, do you find a way of monetizing it for yourself? Do you have a business that you are involved in where you, for a fee, advise people?
Yes. So my business is I work primarily with advisors like Arlington, and I train them how to integrate philanthropy into their practices to build deeper relationships with their clients and engage the next generation. So this happens for everyone. And as they do that, I come in and can provide programs to their clients and the next generation and the generation after that. So there's a comprehensive communication around philanthropy.
So in that vein of talking about that multi-generational giving, what do you mean by that?
Exactly what it sounds. We have great-grandparents, parents, grandparents, kids, maybe grandkids, and they all get together to have some kind of inclusive giving process. It includes everyone.
And do you find that that's a great way to teach the next generation about philanthropy and get them in that frame of mind from an early age?
Yeah, well, it's like anything. If you want it ingrained deeply, you got to learn it from an early age. And I think philanthropy and giving should be taught from a very young age, whether it be volunteering together or getting grandkids a book on giving. Have, as they get older, maybe a birthday party to support an organization. And, you know, there's so many different ways to engage generations that are available to great-grandparents down to infants.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College is a nonprofit organization which supports our own Santa Barbara City College. The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College, or SBCC, funds scholarships, childcare, book grants, and other programs. Without these, many students simply would not be able to attend college. There is an amazing range of academic and vocational studies offered at City College which encourage students to find their passion and their talents. As a donor to the foundation, you have the power to change lives. Please help our community college by donating to the Foundation for SBCC. Call 730-4401 or visit us at sbccfoundation.org to find out how you can help. That's 730-4401 or sbccfoundation.org.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. So, Arlene, there's been several articles about Fidelity and other major mutual fund companies. And in the case of Fidelity, the directed charitable trusts are the number one growing area. Is this the products that these mutual funds providing something you work with, or is it competition to what you do?
No, I work with them. When you look at like the Fidelities and the Schwabs and their donor advised fund groups, the donor advised funds are just excellent tools for family philanthropy. They tend to be more just focused on grant writing and just telling Fidelity where you want them to send the funds. When you work with someone like me, I really help the family write a vision and mission statement and decide on key areas to give to. It's a much more thoughtful, engaged process with families.
And how do you get clients? Do they come through financial advisors, accountants, lawyers? What is the flow? How does the flow of recommendations?
Yes, it's, when I was with the Oregon Community Foundation, my sole focus was the professional advisor group, estate planning attorneys, CPAs, and wealth managers. And that's where most of my clients come from today. They are either that firm or one of the clients of that firm.
You know, Santa Barbara is probably the center per capita of charitable giving. We have somewhere between, I think, 1,200 and 1,600 charities in an area that has 90,000 people. So this sort of the social connections that most people have in this town are through some multiple charities that people work on. I take it for you that's not enough. Just working with a charity is not the same thing as creating a plan for giving from your family wealth.
Yeah, I mean, I really look at philanthropy, and successful families are families that pass down life lessons and stories and have a process in terms of accepting wealth and understanding of what's expected. And those are conveyed from generation to generation. So while, the outward giving of philanthropy is very important, it's also important what is happening on the inside to make your family stronger so you can have effective children and grandchildren. I'm not sure, you've probably heard this statistic before, but 90% of all wealth is lost within 3 generations. And that actually goes back to, China in 2,000 years ago. And every kind of country has their own saying. Ours is shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in 3 generations. So if you want to effectively transfer money to your family, philanthropy is a great way to teach them values to do so.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that, because there have been many studies that show that the first generation makes the money, the second generation makes more money, and the third generation loses it all because
spends it all
because there's some. It's true for royalty and it's true for rich people. There's something that happens, and that's why Warren Buffett said 25 years ago he was going to leave his kids very little amount of money, because he felt it was a bad thing to do. And there have been some exceptions. The Rockefeller family was one. But most families, I agree with you, tend to, when you get to the third generation, they're not really taught values and how to live. And I guess that's one of the things that you're trying to do with instilling the idea of philanthropy in order to keep people focused on what's important in life.
Exactly.
And so, Arlene, how would you recommend that people work philanthropy into their financial and estate planning?
You know, that's a wonderful question. And I think the best way to start is to start by tracking what we do. For example, and this is stretching it a little bit, but every time you buy a box of Girl Scout cookies, you're supporting the Girl Scouts. You drop some coins in the supermarket and you're supporting whatever cause they have there. What I noticed when I worked with people at the Community Foundation is they would say, oh, my overall giving is focused on, you know, animals and the opera. But then when they put their fund together and started making actual grants, what they said they did and what they actually did were two completely different things. So if you track it, you can really start to get an understanding of what you're doing. So you track it, then you kind of budget for it, and if you consolidate it, it makes it all easier.
And how would you recommend consolidating through a donor-advised fund?
Yeah, donor-advised funds are the best giving tool out there. It allows you to put money in, grant it out. You can grant it out anonymously in bits and pieces. It's a lot of flexibility for you and your family.
So, are those funds irrevocable once you put it in?
Yeah. Yes, they're irrevocable because you get a tax deduction when you make the gift. However, most organizations that have advised funds will, you know, always 99.999% of the time make any grant recommendation you give as long as it is an active 501c3.
Has there ever been a case where they haven't honored the original donor's request?
Well, I can only speak for the Oregon Community Foundation. And one time someone wanted to make a gift and they actually, we did the due diligence. The organization was a private foundation and did not even realize it. So they actually went and had to get their tax identification number changed so other donors could get a tax deduction as well.
Oh, so private foundations don't necessarily have that 501c3 designation.
Right, they cannot give to a private foundation. You can't grant to a private foundation.
I see. So now explain to us some of the common misconceptions people have with regards to inherited wealth as you see it.
Yeah, you know, the top three I would say is people assume that parents talk to them about their money. They assume they know what to do with the money. And like I said earlier, wealth will survive for generation after generations. Those are the three biggest misconceptions. And the bottom line is, I'll go through them. They don't know what to do with their money. Many people really don't know what to do with their money. I wholeheartedly believe that they should be teaching personal finance in our schools. It is a life skill that's necessary. So many people don't know how to do that, so we have to get better at that, and we can't assume that just because someone has money or an inherited money that they know what to do with it.
I totally agree with you on education in our schools about financial literacy. It's really tragic that many students, you know, graduate from college without having a basic understanding of their personal finance.
Right. Trigonometry, why not personal finance?
Exactly.
Yeah, one of the issues probably that needs to be focused on is, particularly if there's a couple that one of the spouses took care of the money and dies, and then the other person's left with the money but has no experience, how do you help people understand how much they have and how much they can give?
And that's a really depends on the learning curve of the person and how engaged they are. You know, people go many times, people will go into shock and $20 million doesn't even seem like they can live on it. because they just don't know, because they've never had to deal with it before. Whereas someone else might inherit, like, you know, my mother, when my father passed away, she inherited about all in $1 million, and she was able to live off that for 13 years without an issue. So you really have to dig in to get to know the person and their situation and help them walk through the process so they understand and can make educated choices.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Know someone who's being bullied online? Send the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more about the witness emoji at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hospice of Santa Barbara is there to help when we're adjusting to living with a life-threatening illness, facing death, anticipating the death of a loved one, or healing our grief after a death. Hospice of Santa Barbara can provide the emotional, social, and spiritual care needed in a supportive, compassionate environment. Hospice of Santa Barbara provides professional counseling for individuals and has many support groups and programs for adults, teens, and children. Services are free, made possible by our community's generosity and by all of the highly trained, wonderful volunteers that give of their time to help those in need. If you would like to make a donation, become a volunteer, or support the important work of Hospice of Santa Barbara, or find out more about hospice services for you or someone you love, please call 563-8820, 563-8820, or visit our website at www.hospiceofsantabarbara.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So, Arlene, you know, with the recent tax law changes of 2008, how has that affect? How do you see that affecting philanthropy in America?
Yeah, that's, you know, the U.S. Trust study on high net worth giving just recently came out. And there are some really interesting trends that are happening. And what's happening is with the consolidation of wealth is also coming the consolidation of giving. So last year, while the dollar amount of giving went increased, the number of people who gave is actually down.
Right, because now if you give $100... and you're doing a standard deduction, which is a lot greater than, you know, pretty much doubled, you no longer get a deduction for that $100. Is that correct?
Right. And so what's happening is there is a real correlation between happiness and giving to charity. So when we think of less people are giving money, we're actually decreasing the percent of people who are appreciative and happy in our society. So it's not necessarily a good thing to consolidate giving.
Yeah, but that, you know, sort of follows the whole skewing of wealth in this country. You know, we now have wealth concentrated in the fewest percentage of people that we've ever had. So that's kind of to be expected. Where most people are struggling, there is that 1% that has essentially all the chips, and they're the ones that can be in a position to give.
Right. They are the ones in the position to give.
So what about the idea that, you know, simply your marginal tax rate's down, therefore my deduction's going to be down, I don't want to give as much. Is that just straight up a problem?
You know, another great thing that came out in the study is that truly people really do give for altruistic reasons, and it really doesn't matter about the tax deduction.
How much of giving, and I think I know the answer to this, is, and there's nothing wrong with it, but how much of giving is ego? The idea that your name is going to be someplace that will not only be maybe for many years to come, but also to impress your neighbors. How important it is to find a charity that will give you public recognition?
Wow, I've never had the question asked to me from that perspective before.
You should speak to a New Yorker more often.
I am a New Yorker.
You guys are speaking your same lingo.
There was a great article that came out a number of years ago on the seven faces of philanthropy. And I believe there was one that was ego. And I'm typing in very quickly to see, here it is, seven faces of philanthropy. And
remember, this is radio. We can't have sounds. People will turn it off.
Well, I think it's fair to say that there's probably a small percentage of people that are ego-driven.
I think it's bigger than that. I think people need to be recognized, and I think that's...
Well, I think when you start talking about the larger gifts, I agree with you. When you start talking about the multi-million dollar gifts that then the gates are named after you or something, it's got to be ego, or else they would give anonymously and not want the gates named after them, right?
Yeah. Well, almost all of the anonymous gifts in Santa Barbara is me. I'm going to reveal that for the first time.
You're so generous, Neil.
Right. I'm a Mr. Anonymous.
Oh, that's great. But, you know, part of it is when you name the gates after somebody who people aspire to be, I think it also helps the nonprofit that is receiving the gift as well. You know, if you name the building the Neil Kreisel Building, everybody who wants to be like Neil is going to give that institution more money than they otherwise would have. So it's kind of also, I think, that encouraging others to give, you know, to follow your lead.
Sure. My parents were the exact opposite. My father always gave everything anonymously. He was a businessman. The project was much more important than his name. And my father was like, people have to know we're giving. If we can give, they can give. So, you know, that's why I created a donor advice fund. I have my name on a fund, but I can give anonymously like my dad.
So now walk us through a donor advice fund and what that is.
A donor advised fund is...
Arlene, are you...
Are you still with me?
Yes, we're still together.
Sorry about that. A donor advised fund is like a mini private foundation. You have all the fun of philanthropy, the grant making, finding out about organizations you love, and you don't have to deal with any of the administration. You don't deal with the investments. You don't deal with the due diligence. The nonprofit does everything for you. You make a gift, you get your deduction, and you can start granting.
Now, I've heard that that's one of the best strategies to deal with the current tax law where you get less deductibility of your gifts, is to rather bundle your gifts together in 1 year and then dole them out to the nonprofits over the course of the next 1, 2, 3 years, however that works to get you that charitable deduction on your tax return. Is that something you're seeing people using?
Yes, a lot of people are starting to consolidate when possible. It's not always possible for everyone to consolidate, to make a gift, but donor advised funds are not only used for consolidation for smaller people, but a lot of private foundations who commit to a certain project will create a donor advised fund to move that money out of the private foundation and account for it elsewhere. And they will use donor advised funds to pass through continued gifts.
So what would be the benefit for a private foundation to do it that way?
Well, that's how they can make their gift anonymous.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
and they also get that money off their books. If we're giving, you know, $1 million over the next 3 years, but we want to do our 5% payout, required annual payout this year. We'll pay it into a donor advised fund, and that donor advised fund will pay it the next 3 years. And we don't have to worry about keeping track of that on our books.
So do you have charities calling you and marketing to you because you're in a position to give advice as to where to give money to? Like, do you end up being solicited by charities?
Well, I do help charities with some board development and training, you know, lead by example. And I do help charities with, you know, campaign fundraising. Am I sought after by them? I make it perfectly clear the family is the creating tool and the ones who are going to develop it. I have no say in what shows up in their interest. So I'm not pushing any charity over another.
Now, do you work with community foundations? Are you, you know, Santa Barbara has a community foundation as well as Ventura County, and they're both well-regarded institutions in our communities, and people do go to them as their philanthropic stop. Is that an avenue that you can, you know, parlay your time at the Oregon Community Center?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love working with community foundations. They are amazing organizations that do so much for all of our communities. So I do help them with board trainings. I can even, if interested, do a client or donor event to talk about how everyone can make a gift they never imagined.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Come on, people. Think about it.
It's time to pay attention.
Mortgage industry is not rocket science.
Your guide to the information you can use to choose the best answers to your real estate financing questions.
Join me Tuesdays at 2 p.m., 10 p.m., and Sundays at noon.
Your guy in the mortgage industry, Guy Rivera.
Tune in to 1290 AM, Santa Barbara News Press radio station. For 16 years on State and Islay. I'm Guy Rivera, your guy in the mortgage industry.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. You know, Arlene, I was on Wall Street for a number of years as well, and one of the common features of Wall Street is that people are there just about for one reason only, and that is to increase their own personal wealth. And you've gone from that environment to an environment of giving money away. That's a major cultural change.
You think?
Yeah, you think, yeah. I mean, yeah, what are your friends on Wall Street thinking, that you had a nervous breakdown?
You know, no, they're not thinking that at all. It's been just a long and interesting journey that developed over time, and just always wanting to see, you know, what's next. I've succeeded here. What's next that's going to interest me? And just being curious about my career and what I wanted to create brought me full circle.
Well, you know, the circle you're in is the West Coast, and all I know is that when I moved out here 21 years ago, a friend of mine from work called me and said, would you like to have lunch? I'm going to be in your neck of the woods next week. And I said, sure. Where are you staying? He said, the Fairmont. I said, well, the Fairmont's in San Francisco, 300 miles away. He said, oh, I didn't know that. So, you know, there's a real difference culturally between people from Wall Street and people out here, and I think maybe our friends both – my friends and your friends are thinking that both of us had nervous breakdowns, so we came out here.
I don't know. I think a lot of them are jealous that we have a better quality of life.
That's true. For sure. Yeah. For sure. So what if somebody is listening to the show and they're thinking, how do I go about reaching out to Arlene to help our family become on that same page with shared values for not only volunteerism, but philanthropy and giving, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, so it's real simple. You can find me at arlenekogan.com. And for anyone who's listening, if you send an email and mention Money Talk, then I would be happy to give them a 30-minute consultation on how I might be able to help their family.
And is it something that when you do help these families, is it something that you go and sit down with, have a family meeting, and you facilitate that for them?
That could be something that comes out of the initial communication, yes, where we would, depending on how big the family is, there might be individual interviews as well as a family meeting to bring everyone together. Yes, absolutely.
So you're in Oregon, but you do a national business?
Yes.
And you wrote this successful book. Are you going to write another one?
Yes. So I think the power of the story and what people accomplish is one of the strengths of the book. And I'm hoping to get stories from clients and donors and advisors so we can do the Give to Live for Women, Give to Live for Animal Lovers, Give to Live for fill in the blank. It could be Give to Live for Santa Barbara.
How about Give to Live for People Still on Wall Street?
You know what? We could do that. Are we going to collaborate on this one?
Right. Yeah, it can be co-written, Neil and Arlene.
Right. Well, Arlene, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope our listening audience learn something. They're already predisposed to giving. As I said, we're a community of givers here. And thank everyone for listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.